Welcome once again to our program, our series number 11 on the Da Vinci Code Deciphered. We've been talking about this book that has been so much talked about in our country and even in other countries, about the movie that was made from the book, and now the DVD is coming out at this time, and even a game or two based on the Da Vinci Code. My guest, as usual, is Ron Eldred, who is a professor of government, history, and religion at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran, pastor emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church here at 19th and Poplar, where the Shamrock intersects 19th and Poplar Streets. Ron, welcome once again, and you might give us a little summary of how we got to where we are right now, and then we're going to go into this idea of the sacred feminine that is so stressed in the Da Vinci Code.
Well, what we'd been looking at was some of the attacks that the Da Vinci Code makes on key Christian doctrines, such as one of the claims made in the book is Jesus Christ was not truly divine, but merely a good man raised to a deity by the Emperor Constantine in 325 at the Council of Nicaea. And we spent about, three or four half-hour sessions refuting that claim.
Because it blows the foundation out of who Jesus is. It's the most devastating bomb attack on Jesus in past several hundred years, probably.
And another claim we're just about ready to start refuting is that made in the book is that Jesus Christ came not to save the world from sin, but to restore the sacred feminine. And we're going to spend probably three or four sessions refuting that claim. And then there's some other claims that he made, that Jesus Christ was married to Mary Magdalene and had children. We're going to refute that. And then another, Jesus Christ appointed Mary Magdalene to head the Catholic Church instead of Peter. We're going to refute that one. And then the last one we're going to refute is that the Catholic Church has kept these and other so-called facts hidden through force and intimidation over the centuries. And then that's the last thing that we will refute.
And it's been publicized as blockbusting revelations that will shatter traditional understanding of the Christian and particularly the Catholic faith. And even though it's purported to be a novel fiction, the front of the book has this fact sheet that says all these statements and historical personages, Constantine and the like, and the councils have been thoroughly researched. And that's what we've been trying to say, is that they haven't been thoroughly researched. They've been actually making opposite claims without any historical rooting at all. So many people read the book just because it was a mystery thriller, but I think they didn't understand how fatal, how poisonous an attack it was on, as you said, on Jesus and on the church, the teaching authority of the church, on Peter.
and on the Bible, of course.
The whole Bible, of course. Okay, well, could we go on? The Da Vinci Code has so much to say about restoring the feminine, that Jesus didn't come, as traditionally we believe for 2,000 years, to save the world from sin and self-centeredness and selfishness, but he came to restore the sacred feminine, because he himself really wasn't God at all. He was just a well-known rabbi.
First, we'll consider why Jesus Christ came into the world, and then we'll go into Brown's claim that he came to restore the sacred feminine. And I might add to that goddess worship. We discussed this topic in some detail during our series on understanding the Nicene Creed. So I'll sort of summarize what we discussed then.
Okay.
And we said that Jesus came into the world for a number of reasons, including to restore us to God's family, to elevate our human nature so that we can share in his divinity, to redeem us by suffering and dying on the cross, to suffer and die for our sins, to experience human being human, to show us how much he loves us. Remember John 3:16, of course. To give us hope, to set for us an example of perfect holiness and virtue, to help us reach perfection, and to give us an example and motive for loving others. And these are what the Catholic Church has taught from the very beginning about why Jesus came into the world, and I didn't hear anything there about restoring the sacred feminine or about goddess worship. And hundreds of even thousands of books have been written over the centuries to explain in detail what each of these reasons named above, what they mean. And
okay, now, then, what is the, quotation marks, sacred feminine we hear so much about in the Da Vinci Code?
According to an article I read in a prominent encyclopedia, they define this way, quote, "The sacred feminine refers to the feminine power seen as holy in certain religious traditions, especially Gnosticism and neo-paganism. This tradition venerates female beauty and the power of sexual reproduction. This belief assumes that women, through the ability to bear children, are closer to the sacred than men. Through the sacred feminine, men can experience the spiritual act of sexual intercourse. As in the concept of yin and yang from the ancient Chinese philosophy, men and women are seen as representing complementary attributes, working together as a symbiotic circle. One cannot live without the other." To go on, and quoting from the encyclopedia, "This relationship is sacred. A woman and a man are seen as complementing one another to become one. And together they can create the miracle of new life." End of quote. Now, of course, some of that sounds very Christian.
Well, sure.
And if we had time, we could develop, John Paul developed a whole theology of the Bible, of the body, that dealt with that subject. And people like Dietrich von Hildebrand wrote numbers of really, really wonderful books, and his wife Alice on that subject. And other people as well. But in other words, the sacred feminine is the divine power of women to give birth. And Dan Brown believes that the Catholic Church suppressed the idea of the sacred feminine.
Okay, now you just mentioned the long word neo-paganism, or a new kind of paganism. Can you give us a brief summary of the neo-pagan reconstruction of the history of religion, or rewriting the history of religion?
I think to understand where Dan Brown's coming from in the Da Vinci Code, knowledge of this topic, this reconstruction is necessary. Goddess religion, as it has been created during the past few decades, has nothing to do with any goddess religions of the prehistoric world, although he likes to make that connection. It has been nothing more than the creation of radical feminists and witches in their own image, to some extent. Whether it is true or not doesn't really matter to them, because most radicals don't believe in objective reality anyway. If truth is relative and everything is simply opinion, then one might as well create his or her own reality to suit his or her own desires. And this includes creating one's own religion, especially, I think, creating one's own religion. And I think partially the reason we have cafeteria Catholicism today, people, that kind of mentality.
Sure, pick and choose what I like, right, and let go what I don't like.
Right. Philip G. Davis tells us in his really a great book here called Goddess Unmasked, subtitled The Rise of Neo-Pagan Feminist Spirituality, that the goddess religion is a complete rewriting of Western religious history that describes a struggle between male and female. He says, the story goes on that there once existed, and I'm going to quote here a little bit from him, an original, positive, affirming religion of the female deity, and a later usurping, oppressive, and patriarchal set of religions and philosophies based on the Judeo-Christian and the Greco-Roman traditions. End of quote. He goes on to say, and I'll quote him again here, in this story, the God of the Bible is not joined by the goddess or even subordinated to her. He is instead reduced to being the villainous self-image of sexist, racist oppressors who have supposedly dominated most of recorded history, bringing suffering and degradation to women, children, and the earth itself. End of quote.
Well, you know, you say Davis has written this book about the new pagan feminist spirituality that actually rewrites Western religious history.
Yes.
In some sense, didn't the communists try to do that, rewrite history?
Yes.
Marx tried to rewrite history. I think probably even Hitler probably tried to have a revisionist history. People can always change history, but it doesn't mean that they're doing it authentically or with substantial fact. Okay, well, how's the story go, rewriting this history of Western religious history?
Well, this story, or rewriting of history, has been called the Goddess Myth by various scholars. And according to the radical feminist version of history, the earliest human religion was worship of the great goddess by settled Stone Age peoples. That was the first kind of religion. According to Davis, the goddess, I'll quote him a little bit here, being female, symbolized the life forces of birth and nurture, growth and fertility, death and rebirth. End of quote. Now, since the male role in the conception of children was not yet understood by these Stone Age peoples, this is the goddess myth that we're talking about here.
Okay. Davis is trying to unmask this as not really accurate history.
Yes, and these Stone Age people simply didn't understand the male role in the conception of children. So, as a consequence of that, social organization was centered on the female, who gave women, in general, a high status and a value in these so-called Stone Age societies. He points out that in this environment, now this is by he, I'm talking about Davis, he points out that in this environment, feminists claim that an almost utopian goddess culture developed in these Stone Age cultures, which covered the vast territory between Britain and South Asia. In other words, most of the known world at that time. And in this matriarchal heavenly earth, life was believed to be peaceful, with weapons and fortifications rarely to be found, simply because they were not needed in such a society, according to this goddess myth. Furthermore, in a society where wealth was shared on a non-competitive basis, envy was eliminated, and people weren't rewarded for a conquest and exploitation of others. You know, it kind of paints of a picture of a utopia, you know, kind of a heaven on earth, almost a Garden of Eden.
Okay.
Moreover, life was prosperous because the goddess was closely identified with the fertile earth, resulting in a natural, positive approach to ecology. I believe that belief in this notion is the main reason radical feminists are often so ecologically minded, because of this whole goddess myth kind of thing.
And of course, there's nothing wrong with being ecologically minded, but it gets carried away.
As trustees of God's creation, we're supposed to be ecologically minded and trustees of the earth. Now, harmony existed during this period, according to the goddess myth, because women loved all their children equally, boys and girls, which militated against the development of social hierarchies or the hoarding of wealth by the few. Now, tragically, the story goes on to tell us that these peaceful and harmonious societies were defenseless against the onslaught of roving barbarians, such as the Indo-Europeans of the northern steppes and the Semites of the southern deserts. Now, again, this is a part of the goddess myth. These were wandering tribes of herdsmen who fought over cattle, land, and anything else that which got in their way. The violence of these groups is taken as proof that these groups were patriarchal. Men must have ruled by force, according to the goddess myth, with women and children reduced to being nothing more than mere possessions.
Okay, so it's a very pro-goddess, pro-woman, anti-man myth.
Yes.
That's where violence and possessiveness and greed come in.
Yes, this was a so-called Stone Age type of pagan existence. Now, according to this feminist version of history, these cattle breeders knew about the role that men played in the conception of children. So they imposed patriarchal systems of inheritance on their offspring, as opposed to matriarchal, that is, a woman-dominated society. Moreover, since they were nomads, who never settled down in any one place for very long, they were patrilocal, meaning that the men decided where to live and when and where to move and those kinds of things. Ecology or care of the natural environment would mean very, very little, according to the myth, to such men who didn't stay in one place very long. In other words, they didn't become attached to the land. Now, naturally, feminists conclude, such men invented and worshipped powerful and violent male gods, more associated with stormy skies than with the earth.
Okay, so you're still quoting Davis, who's trying to trace the roots of the sacred feminine in the Da Vinci Code.
Yes, and we're describing this goddess myth as Davis explains. Now, as the story goes,
which he doesn't agree with. Which he does not agree with?
Yes, he doesn't agree with.
Right.
Yes. As the story goes on, Davis writes that around 5000 BC, these nomadic tribes began large-scale migrations, which destroyed the early settled societies in their path, these early Stone Age societies. They adopted whatever cultural elements of civilization they saw as useful, but supposedly forced their patriarchal social systems on these early civilizations that they conquered, these Stone Age societies, these matrilocal, matrilineal type societies, matriarchal type women type dominated societies, where the sacred feminine, of course, was prominent. And they especially singled out goddess worship for destruction. The conquerors fabricated new mythologies to either celebrate the defeat and destruction of the goddess, or worse yet, to ignore the goddess worship altogether. So in the place of the goddess utopia, which with its social equality and respect for the environment, they imposed hierarchies of sex, class, and race, and treated the earth as a mere object of exploitation. Now, according to this new myth, the patriarchal systems came into full flower in the Greek, Alexandrian, and Roman conquest, and then, of course, in the Christian church.
Pretty condemnatory of Christian church and the roots of Roman and Greek civilization.
Yes, and according to Davis, because of vicious persecution, the goddess cultures were forced underground. And supposedly secret groups were able to pass the secret of the sacred feminine and goddess worship down through the ages. And according to the myth, or the goddess myth, the secret was passed down from mother to daughter, taking great care to keep the secret out of sight of the oppressive social and religious authorities, patriarchal authorities. Now, occasionally, these loyal goddess worshippers were caught and severely punished. And we're led to believe that the witch hunts of the 16th and 17th centuries were attempts to exterminate the goddess religion. And this myth claims that as many as 9 million, at least 80% of them women, perished during the so-called burning times, or the so-called witch hunts. And I don't want to get into the details, but competent historians have soundly refuted this claim. Again, it's easy to see Dan Brown's reliance on this myth in the Da Vinci Code. Anybody who's read it or seen the movie would very readily see how this myth, this so-called goddess myth, just simply permeates the whole thing. And finally, to conclude, Davis says that the goddess myth, by telling us that feminists claim that the destructive forces of patriarchy have about run their course, that patriarchy's about run its course.
Okay.
They've almost run to the point where they're undermining the political, economic, and social system itself. And he says that goddess spirituality, let me quote Davis here, quote, goddess spirituality assures us that the current crisis of Western civilization is a sign that the male god reign is coming to an end, that the goddess is waiting to lead us into a new age of peace and harmony, if we will only follow her. We must jettison patriarchy and all its supportive institutions, male god religions, monogamous patrilineal families, and all hierarchies of power and authority. If we fail to do this, the alternative we are said to face may be the end of civilization and even life on earth, end of quote. In other words, this is Davis telling us what this is, a
what
part of
the myth goddess, is yeah, claiming
what
to be.
Myth is claiming, yes. And you can definitely see this, of course, in the Da Vinci Code, this whole mentality.
Okay. Now, I suppose the big question then is, well, what is the evidence to be found for this sacred feminine myth or the goddess spirituality story that reigns so long and so brought so much peace and tranquility to the world?
Certain feminist scholars and other writers cite archaeological discoveries in Crete, Malta, prehistoric Britain, places in Turkey and in the Balkans, and elsewhere as evidence of the existence of goddess societies and cultures in the ancient world that the goddess myth describes, that we discussed earlier here. Wherever the Indo-Europeans and Semites went, they destroyed the sacred feminine and goddess worship and replaced it with patriarchy and God the Father. This is according to the myth. And we don't have time to go into all these claims, but competent anthropologists, archaeologists, and historians have decisively refuted the claims that goddess societies ever even existed. And Philip Davis has considerable evidence of that in his book, Goddess Unmasked. But after carefully evaluating the evidence presented by the feminist scholars for the existence of goddess worship in these societies, Davis asserts, quote, this is very important, not a single one of these sites provides clear evidence of a single supreme female deity. Not a single one exhibits the signs of matriarchal rule or even the serious political power sharing between the sexes. Not a single one displays with any surety the enlightened attitude towards social egalitarianism, nonviolent interpersonal and interstate relations, and ecological sensitivity, which they have been led to anticipate. That is, you know, anticipate in the myth. In each of these cases, the story of the goddess is a fabrication in defiance of the facts, end of quote.
Or well, no, excuse me, Ron, but say once again, because that's a powerful statement against the sacred feminine as has been rewritten in the myth. Who again is Davis, and what book is it that he wrote?
It's called Goddess Unmasked. An excellent, excellent book.
Is he a historian?
Yes, he's an historian.
Okay.
I believe he's at Penn State University, if I recall right.
Okay.
Well, after having given a mountain of evidence to disprove this goddess myth, then he sort of concludes with this statement, and I'll read part of it again.
Okay.
Not a single one of these sites that feminist scholars quote as evidence of the truth of the goddess myth, not a single one of these sites provides clear evidence of a single supreme female deity. Not a single one exhibits the signs of matriarchal rule, or even of serious political power sharing between the sexes. Not a single one displays with any surety the enlightened attitude towards social egalitarianism, nonviolent interpersonal and interstate relations, and ecological sensitivity, which we have been led to anticipate. In each of these cases, the story of the goddess is a fabrication in defiance of the facts, end of quote. And he's provided the facts in his book.
Okay.
We just simply haven't taken that time to do that here.
Could you give me again, I think you quoted a rather long title in the beginning. What was the name of his book? The Rise of Neo-Pagan Feminist Spirituality, The Goddess Unmasked?
Yes, that's the subtitle. The Goddess Unmasked is the name, and then The Rise of...
Okay, and it's Philip Davis.
Philip Davis, yes. Okay. He's also written a great book called The Last Acceptable Prejudice, subtitled Anti-Catholicism.
Really? And I believe he's not a Catholic
he's
himself.
He's not a Catholic, but he's a better defender of the Catholic faith than lots of Catholics are.
Wow. Well, that's encouraging to hear. How did this myth get to be popular? How did it get to be Western history of religion be rewritten?
Well, I think it happened because feminists have rewritten history to conform to their own ideological preconceptions, what they want to be. In this regard, Davis quotes the French feminist Monique Wittig, quote, and this is really a juicy quote, make an effort to remember, or failing that, invent, end of quote. In other words, here's a feminist scholar telling other feminists who are doing research that, quote, remember, make an effort to remember, on failing that, invent. End of quote. In other words, make it up, whatever you want to make up. And I think this represents the view of reality and the truth held by most social radicals, including many radical feminist writers, that there exists no objective truth outside of one's mind. Therefore, one is justified in constructing reality in accordance with his or her own opinions. And of course, this is just simply pure subjectivity. But I think it's easy to see how Dan Brown appears to buy into this story, that is, that whole goddess myth in the Da Vinci Code. His critics claim that he has in mind the alternative of replacing God the Father with the sacred feminine and the goddess. And to him and his radical feminist allies, replacing God the Father with a feminine deity is a solution to curing the social and environmental ills of our time.
Okay, so powerful statements, both by Dan Brown in the Da Vinci Code and Philip Davis in his trying to explain and debunk all this feminine, sacred history that has been, to a great extent, invented.
You mentioned the word debunk. Henry Ford is the one who first... developed that term. He'd made an expression one time because he didn't care too much for history, and he said, history's all bunk.
Oh.
And so anytime people use the word debunking here when they're trying to run down some historical view or trying to revise it and coming up with something else.
I didn't know that.
In other words, it isn't true.
Well, Ron, our time has run out on us once again. Thanks for your wonderful participation. May God bless you always and in all ways to all our listeners.